The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, show 158, Thursday, 29th of May, 2008. Show with TechRadar.com. I'm Ian Dixon, and thanks for listening. And a great show for you this week. I'm going to be talking to Fuse Media Systems, talking about their whole home media systems. They have a slightly different approach to Media Center, as they have their own software, but they use parts of Media Center. So their system has got things like distributed audio, distributed video, including live TV, all around the home, and it's a kind of more locked down system. So we'll be talking to Fuse Media about what their system is and who it's aimed at as well. You may have seen me talk to them at CES with Richard Miller, and I did a video on that, so you can have a look at the video and the link for that is in the show notes. So I've also got email and news items. So thanks for listening, welcome along to the show. Good show for you this week. Let's get straight into the email. And this is from Bob. Hi Ian, given you're a big proponent of WebGuide, I have the following question. Is there a way to search through the guide using the mobile interface for remote scheduling via mobile phone? I found that on my phone I must log in via the standard interface to search for a program, and then once I've found it, switch to the mobile interface to re-find the program by paging down the guide list and finally scheduling it. As you might have guessed, it's quite tedious and time consuming on a mobile phone. Additionally, there seems to be a problem with the mobile interface where the page down button in the guide reloads a page rather than paging down. I've searched through the forums and only found unanswered posts. On a side note, do you know if Doug Barrett is doing anything with WebGuide anymore? Given that Microsoft have featured it in many of their demos recently, it seems odd that they'd abandon it, but his last post to WebGuide forums back in January, and it's too bad because development seemed fast and frequent until he joined Microsoft. Great show, keep it up, Bob. Thanks for the email, Bob. What you mentioned about searching, yeah, you're right, you can't do that from the mobile interface. I did find that the page down button worked on my phone. Maybe it depends on the version of the phone. It would be great to see more development for WebGuide, because as everybody mentions who uses it, it's a very handy application. Just being able to go to another browser, or to go to a browser on another machine, schedule a recording from your home machine, or use your mobile is fantastic. And Microsoft do seem to like demoing WebGuide, especially to the custom installer market, so it would be strange if they killed it, but there's definitely nothing from Microsoft about the future of WebGuide or from Doug. Us enthusiasts would definitely like to see it continue, so hopefully there'll be more development of that coming in the future. Now to an email from Andy Van Til. Andy is the developer of DVR MS Toolbox. This is the fantastic application that can do a whole lot of tricks with your recorded TV files. So it could take commercials out, it can transcode them into different formats, it can move them onto different machines. Andy's been on the show in the past, and it is a very handy application. And last week we had a question about Wake on LAN, where the listener would like, when you wake up one PC, to wake up the other PC. So say you wake up your bedroom PC from sleep mode, you'd want it then to wake up the living room PC and stream content from there. And Andy said, hey, I thought I'd let you know that the latest DVRMS toolbox has the functionality that your listener was looking for. One PC to automatically wake up another PC when Windows Media Center is used. Cheers, Andy. So that would be the perfect solution. Even better, I think, from what Andy's saying, if it fires up Media Center on the bedroom PC and then loads up the or wakes up the other lounge machine so that you can then stream contents from it. So I really like that idea, and if you're trying to save on having all your machines pumping away 24 hours a day, then this looks a good solution. So check out DVRMS Toolbox, a link for that in the show notes, and it like I said, it does a whole lot more, so definitely worth looking at. And keep the email coming in, Ian at the digitallifestyle.com. I do like getting your emails. send those in, any subject, anything media centre related, digital lifestyle, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. One thing I do want on the subject of email is I want your thoughts on home automation. On the show we talked about home automation plenty of times, and I really wanted to get a feel for how people are using home automation, especially with things like M-Control, home automation packages being affordable now. You could just do a simple thing like switching lights on and off with it, all the way up to full environmental control and security systems. You know, we talk about home automation a lot on the show, but I actually wanted to get sort of real listeners and real world experiences. So let me know, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Let me know what kind of home automation you're using. What kind of devices are you controlling? What software are you using? Do you use security? Do you think it's a waste of time? Do you think it's something that's not necessary? I mean, we should be conserving power and not looking at home automation. Let me know your experiences, and we're going to talk about them on a future show. So email me, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Now to a quick roundup of some news items before we go to the interview. Cinema Now is available on Media Center. Got an email from Microsoft about this. At first I thought it was US only, but it does seem that some UK listeners have emailed me to say that they've picked up on it as well. So what is Cinema Now? It's a library of over 3,400 feature-length movies that are available directly through Media Center. And the example that the email gives is movies like Sweeney Todd or Juno, without having to have, you can watch them in Media Center without having to have cable TV subscription. So if you've got Media Center already, then that could be available. I think it's available through the Explore tile in Media Center. I'd like to hear anybody using this, actually. I'm going to try and have a go at it myself. So let me know, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, what you think. To me, this is one of the ways forward, is to have high-definition content downloaded directly into Media Center. I'm not a huge fan of Blu-ray, and I'd much rather have downloadable content, but obviously we've got things like bandwidth issues, so Blu-ray still has a place, and maybe DVD over Blu-ray even, but I'd still like to see this kind of download service. And talking of Blu-ray, actually, have anybody made the jump to Blu-ray yet? If you have, what's your experiences like? I did try Blu-ray on the Dragon Machine that I gave away a couple of weeks ago, and I still find the software takes a long time to come on to get to the movie, and you got impatient kids, so I can imagine it being I know how impatient my kids can be when you're putting a DVD on, so I can imagine it being an issue. Obviously the quality of the content is great, but is it worth it over DVD? It's still a talking point, but anyway, I'd like to hear your thoughts. Let me know on that one. If you've been having problems with restricted content errors on your cable card system, Microsoft wants to hear from you. There was a thread on the green button. Microsoft is investigating the restricted content error you may have reported in various threads. We're attempting to reproduce the problem in our test labs, and we're trying to understand if this was caused by a Windows update, a device failure, or some other root cause. We're also looking into updates from Windows Update that were made available on or around the 5th of May to understand if any of these can explain the issues being reported. So I think if you're having problems, head over to the thread, and I think you can put your comments on there and describe your situation and what hardware and software you're running, and help Microsoft get some data to see if they can reproduce these errors. There's a link for that in the show notes. And one blog I do like reading is the Microsoft Consumer Electronics blog. It's a fairly new one, but there's some interesting articles on there. And previously we talked about their article where they had Media Center in a rack with extenders and then distributing the content around the home. It was an interesting solution, but for me, I preferred the idea of having the extenders distributed on the edge of the network. And that's actually the subject of the latest post. They're talking about having extenders at the endpoints, or say in the bedroom, in the kitchen, in the living room, and having a rack-mounted Media Center server and then distributing around the content over the network, which I think is a nice solution. And have a look, they've got a nice diagram of that as well. The article does go on to point out some of the disadvantages doing it that way, as opposed to the other way I mentioned. So have a look at that, link for that in the show notes. I'm sure some of you are still on Windows XP Media Center, and if you've had a problem connecting an extender since you installed Service Pack 1, Then Microsoft's Aaron Stebner has details of what's causing the issue and how to resolve it if you do get stuck with that. And I think the eHelm team's working on an update. But check out the link in the show notes. I think this really is if you add an extender after you've installed Service Pack 3. So if you've already got your extender connected, then it's not an issue. I spotted a new application that's been launched, and I've not seen anybody post about this yet, but it's called TV Stream Caption Seeker, and it's an application for searching through the captions in TV shows, and then you can search the text in the show and jump straight to the scene, which looks an interesting idea. So basically, you record the TV show, it captures the captions within the show, and then you can put any word from in the show, search for it, and it'll take you directly to that to play that point. Maybe quite good if you remember in a certain scene and you can type it in for it, or if you're going through your previous list of shows and you want to look for a quote or something like that, then you can do it that way as well. It's a good way of adding metadata to the existing metadata that comes down. I think it's definitely an interesting idea. So have a look at that link in the show notes. I'd be interested to hear if anybody's tried it as well. We're going to be getting them on the show in the future to talk about that as well, so we'll get some more information about that. So if you've got any questions for that, send those in again, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, and I'll keep those until we do the interview. Alright, thank you to everybody that's following me on Twitter. It's a great way to keep in touch when it's up. They've had a few issues with it going, the service going up and down. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/isdixon, isdixon. I'll definitely follow you back. I am really enjoying the way that we can communicate with people, and there's some regular people that I talk to on Twitter now that just listen to the show and subscribed and followed, and I get information back from them, which is great. So I really do like that. I also wanted to mention the Windows Media Center Ultimate Enthusiast competition that we ran a while ago. There was nearly 170 pictures submitted in the Flickr group, and we've selected the finalists. So have a look at the link in the show notes. There's four finalists. Go and have a look at their pictures and just email me and let me know which is the best setup you think. And there's some prizes about Xbox 360s and Xbox 360 Elites and some controllers. And also there's prizes for you to enter. So if you vote, I'm going to include you in the draw, and I've got software, I've got a Zune to give away. Have a look at all the details in the show notes. Tells you how to enter. Would like to see which ones you like. Right, now it's time for a message from One Voice, and I'll be back with Fuse Media Systems.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE speech tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Bob Silver, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Well, thank you, Ian, and look forward to the opportunity to speak with you and your audience.
So you're VP Marketing for Fuse Media Systems, and we saw Fuse Media at CES, and I only did a short video, but that generated a lot of interest about Fuse Media. So let's start with who are Fuse, and what's the kind of products that you're offering?
Okay. Fuse is a company that basically was formed probably about three and a half years ago now. And the core founders came from a company called On Command. And On Command, if you've ever been in a hotel and watched a movie, they were the pioneers of that technology. On Command initially was based not two blocks from where our office is today. Became very successful, had about 1 million rooms that had basically on-demand movies, and that technology was built on the Wintel platform initially with Windows 98, and then whatever the current, I guess, first generation Pentium products. Well, the folks that founded the company were predominantly the VP of engineering and the COO of On Command, and some of the engineers and system architects that were there founded Fuse. And Fuse was founded basically with the desire and premise that the On Command folks could get a million people around the room watching movies whenever they wanted, yet their wives at home often had trouble figuring out how to turn the DVD player on or get music to play. So they wanted to build a system that would really transcend the computer-esque or more, even more importantly, the complexity of integrated systems to something that would be easy to use, be intuitive to use, and would be reliable. So that was what Fuse was founded on. I joined the company, I guess now about a year and a half ago. I was an advisor to them for about 6 months before that. And that's kind of the short story about how we got where we are today.
And what we saw at CES was a media center product. And I think what initially caught our attention was the whole home audio and the synchronized audio. But I mean, it's much more than that. It's a whole platform. As you mentioned, it's about simplifying some of the aspects of media center as well.
Yeah, that's true. There are basically three things that at least we talk about as our value proposition and how we're different than any other product in the market. So the first one is a consumer appliance-like user interface. The interface is immediately easy to understand. There's a term in the industry called the wife acceptance factor, which I'm sure many of your audience probably know about. And that's when when the wife can pick up the remote, understand it, and not be intimidated by it, they tend to accept it. And that's something that we believe has not really ever been satisfied with products like these. Media Center, as rich a product as it is and as nice a product as it is a bit intimidating for most non-technical people. So our user interface has really been designed to be inviting and not intimidating. We believe we've scored high on those marks. The second value proposition we believe we have is a whole home approach. And this is not just for audio, although we do that, but it's also true of all the video, be it television, photos, movies, etc. And that in that, the user interface is the same from room to room, device to device. So if you can figure out how to work your TV in your den, you will be able to figure out how it's going to work in your bedroom and any other room that you have a system installed. Along with this is that we have a kind of an activity screen that shows on our homepage so that you know what's happening room by room. So if you in fact decide that you want to play music throughout the house and you notice that in the bedroom there's a television session going, you will have the option to choose to add or not add that audio session in a given room based upon what other activity is going on there. No other system in the market really does that. In a media center world, as your readers probably know, or your audience probably knows and understand, is that you can pull other devices or rather other software and devices into a media center to get a whole home audio, but you wind up with our multiple audio sessions. You wind up with a standard media center media session, and then maybe you have a Rust sound or some other type of environment where we actually have this thing totally integrated, so it feels as if it was built from the ground up to do this single purpose. Now, The third value proposition we have is on the heels of reliability. Media Center, if you set it up properly and do all the right things, is in fact pretty reliable. But where it does fall down is in two areas that we see. One is the fact that it's a general purpose computer running a media application. The user can easily get into trouble either by leaving that Media Center environment or by even some of the things such as the what was called the online spotlight areas can sometimes get you in trouble just by sheer using them. So in this area, we basically lock out of the system the things that we feel are potentially problematic. And what we are now in the process of doing is building back into the system those functions and those environments that we feel either by virtue of the fact that we can lock them in, meaning that if they go awry, we can bring the user back to the home page, not have them see the desktop and have to pull out a keyboard. That's one area. The other area has to do with things like memory utilization. As you use a media center, the memory creeps and creeps. We've known this, we've been well aware of it, and we have processes, as an example, within our systems that will refresh and restart when the system's idle to keep the system kind of fresh and the performance running the same unit by unit, day by day. So just to kind of summarize for you, there are three things that make Fuse different. It's an appliance-like user interface. It has been designed from the ground up for the whole home, not room by room, but an integrated whole home experience. And then lastly, is we believe that we've significantly enhanced the reliability of Media Center through a contained environment as well as health processes that we've built in place.
Right, so that sounds great. So let's look at some areas of that. And so you mentioned like it's appliance-like. So does that mean that this is a layer that sort of sits on top of Media Center and, like you said, prevents you from going to some areas like Online Spotlight or even leaving Media Center altogether?
Well, yes, actually. We are an application that runs on top of Vista, but we consume the computer. What I mean by that is there's no exiting from our application once it's been launched. And obviously, when a machine boots, it automatically boots into our application. Now, you know, with the know-how, you can't obviously get out of the application, otherwise we would not be able to maintain these systems. But from a user perspective, it always operates in the media environment that it's in. It's more like a TiVo than it is like a media center in this case. TiVos run Linux, and they're running an application on top of Linux, but you really can't get out of that application to get back into Linux unless you've got the know-how to do that. And the same is true with our application here. Now, we only leverage the Media Center applications that we have ensured that we can get to work right. And if there happens to be a failure, as in one of the applications crashes, be it a TV application or whatever it may be within Media Center, that we don't require the customer to have to go pull out a keyboard. Everything can be recovered either by going to, it either goes directly back to our desktop or with a simple, what we call a 1234 is a quick reboot that will reboot our environment with basically within 30 seconds, you'll be up and running again.
Right. So you switch your machine on and it goes into this dedicated sort of mode and that's it, that's your system, and you don't have to then, you know, load other things up on top of that.
That's correct. When the system boots up, it boots up directly into our environment. The system more or less self, I don't want to say self-configures itself, it's already been configured, but if you've got an environment with you know, multiple video zones and audio zones and whatnot, it goes out, makes sure everything is there. And if need be, our clients will do a reboot on their own if they need to kind of come up and be ready to be used. Mm.
So we'll come back to the hardware in a moment, Bob. I just wanted to talk about some of the features, really, because that's what a lot of the listeners will be interested in. So when you first switch it on and I remember seeing from CS, you come to kind of an activity screen. So what is it you get in your initial sort of menu?
So what we provide as part of the standard product are key Media Center functions such as live television, recorded television. You have the Fuse music application. You have videos, home videos, photos, here movies, and they're the primary applications that you have in the system. Weather as well is in there. Other standard applications which we'll be releasing in the future will be a news application. We'll have a webcam application for surveillance cameras. And We will be releasing a Blu-ray option for the product as well in the next 30 days.
And so this replaces the traditional Media Center sort of startup page. So instead of having that, you have this sort of enhanced menu instead.
Yes, that's correct. Mm.
One of the features that generated a lot of interest was the TV functions and the way that you can get live TV distributed around the home. And you mentioned that you kind of did the whole home audio and video as well. So in a scenario where I've got multiple machines in multiple rooms and I want to watch live TV in any of those rooms, is it possible then to sort of pick up live TV in different rooms and maybe synchronize those together as well?
Well, we deal with television differently than a traditional media center and an extender model. We deal with television from a device-by-device with a distributed tuner architecture that is integrated. Mm. What do I mean by this? So let me expand on that. So our current hardware platform is, in the U.S. at least, a cable card-oriented platform. And then our clients, which we currently use an AOPIN mini device as a video client, each of these are capable of handling up to four tuners. So unlike an extender model where you're limited to currently four tuners in total, in our case, you can have four tuners per client. So if you had a four video zone system, you in theory could have 16 different tuners. So you have plenty of tuner capacity. We have a synchronized system from a recording perspective so that if you initiate recordings in one place, the system will actually look around and see what available tuners are there. So in other words, if you initiate a recording in one place and tuners are being used, it'll go look elsewhere for available tuners and initiate a recording
right,
using one of the zones that we have. So that's an entirely different model than what you normally have with the media center.
Yeah, that's totally sort of the reverse way around. So the tuners can be at the edge of the sort of the network on each device, and then they can be, I guess, then pooled them between. So could you, for example, be watching live TV of one of the boxes that's coming in from a signal from one of the other boxes?
Well, if your live TV would always be watched from a tuner that is connected to that particular client. And the tuners we use a couple of different tuners. So we use network-based tuners, we use USB-based tuners that might leverage a cable box, we use cable card tuners. So depending upon what the hardware device is, you can use any combination of those tuners.
Right. See, so if you've got a network-based tuner, then that could be shared between multiple clients then?
Yes, the network-based tuners, each device has two tuners, and they can, when you set up and configure the system, you determine where you want to put them.
Mm-hmm. So rather than having the model of everything in one central location, then hardware extenders, you have the tuners sort of connected to individual devices.
Correct. Yeah, that's right.
Mm. Which, like you said, gives you capacity to have more tuners and, I suppose, a more flexible arrangement of kind of the extender model. So you don't have to have one of the V2 extenders. You can actually have a PC because you're picking up using a network tuner.
Correct. That's right.
Mm. Which is, I think, was one of the things that people were surprised about because we're kind of not used to that model.
Yeah, no, that's true. They're not used to the model. The model's been the extender model. The other thing for, because your audience is a knowledgeable media center audience, there's certainly, you have the ability from a recorded TV, there's some other enhancements that we've done as well. Just to kind of expand on what we've done here, moving aside from the tuners for a moment, just talking about recorded television. So obviously we share a pool of recorded television throughout the entire environment, the entire network. One of the things that, many of us who don't want to use extenders that want to use PCs as your clients and go in and make the appropriate hacks and whatnot, fail to recognize until it's a little too late that the recorded television, the updates and whatnot for that, when you've recorded something, you actually need to go back and restart processes to update and keep all that your your recorded television list fresh. We've done a lot of work in this area so that we actually replicate the same experience you get with an extender on recorded television than you do through clients. And I've not seen any hacked media center able to emulate what we've done here. So that's another advantage to some of the work that we've done.
If you're using map drives on a client PC back to a main media center PC, when you go into recorded TV, you see everything that's been recorded. But if something's been deleted or recorded in the meantime from you first loading up that application, it doesn't refresh the changes. So that's what you've written. You've written a way of doing that.
That's right. Yeah. Any of the deletes are accurate, and any of the refresh recordings are also accurate, which in the case of a hacked media center, you basically have to go back and restart the machine to get it to update.
Right. So, yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize that when they first get that working, is that you don't get... and a lot of the time you leave Media Center open all the time, so you're not getting to see the changes going from the host machine.
Right, that's right. And I prior to joining Fuse, have been a long-term Media Center user, and it was one of the key frustrations that I found. It was like, oh, these guys figured that out. So yeah, that's a key part of what we've done there as well.
So that's an aspect where you've kind of replaced some of the Media Center functionality. So when you're going to recorded TV, this is actually a Fuse application rather than the standard Media Center TV application.
Yes, that's right. What we've done is we basically unbolt, if you would, many of the Media Center processes and applications. And then we put our secret sauce around it and then put it back together. So like the TV functions and everything are strictly Microsoft. But in this example of the refresh of the recorded television, our system has the smarts to say that it's got to go back and refresh itself. I'm not sure of the frequency that it does it, but it does it very frequently so that if you were to delete anything or anything new got recorded, you would see it within minutes of it happening.
That goes back to what you were saying earlier on, that it just makes it simple, because when it's a hack, you've got to explain to your wife or to the kids, oh well, you need to restart Media Center to see the new programs. This just, you know, just does that kind of thing automatically.
Yes, that's accurate. That's accurate.
Mm. Now, one of the areas that we got the demo of at CS was the music functions and the whole home audio, because this is an area that really out of the box Media Center, where you can play audio in different zones and different devices, to get that kind of synchronization is just something it doesn't do. So can you explain to us how the music library functions work?
Sure. So this is a ground up application for us. There really wasn't anything that we were able to make use of within Media Center. So it's something that we had to put a lot of time, a lot of man hours in to develop. So our music application, again, has the smarts that we know not only what's happening music-wise, but we also know what's happening with other aspects of the system. As I mentioned, if there's a television session going on, or maybe a photo session or a video session. And where there is a audio usage, such as video or television, we always will default to the video session as opposed to the music session. So there's logic in this that will not allow it to overrun something that's already there without user intervention of saying, yes, that's okay to cancel that. Now, our music application has been modeled more like an iPod, so that the first thing you see when you go into it are playlists, artists, albums, and genres. And it really does work like iTunes. You just drill down, and we don't have, for example, the limitations that the Microsoft Media Center Music app has, which I always found frustrating, which is when we go from genres, the logical next step is you go to artists, which is what we do in Media Center. It goes from genre to albums. Well, if you only have 30 albums, that's okay. But many of our customers have well in excess of 10 to 15. We've got some users that have over 30,000 songs within their library. So that type of a model really, we believe, is broken on the Media Center platform. We've obviously fixed that. Once you select whatever you want, you have the ability to create a playlist within the system, which you can then save or choose an existing playlist if you want, and then decide where it is that you want to play that. Now, we are a many-to-many metaphor. What I mean by that is that we support up to 19 music zones. And you have the ability to play 19 different things or one thing in 19 different places, it being fully synchronized when you're playing in a whole house type mode. It's an application which, again, I go back to say it really does model and looks and feels a lot like an iPod in the way that it operates. We felt like, that's a model that people really understand. So why create a wheel that's already been invented? Fully leverages album artwork and things of that nature. So it's a very clean, very easy to use application.
I like the fact that you could kind of pick the zone that that you wanted to play in. So if you just, you're at the machine and you want to listen to the music, then you could just play it on your machine. But it also, if you wanted to sync it up with another zone, it kind of paused it for a second and then synced up the audio so that if you've got, so you've not got like a delay or lags or any phase or anything between the different zones. It was just all nicely synchronized up, and you could just do that from the UI.
Yes, that's right. And you have the ability to do that anywhere in the home. So in other words, I could be in my bedroom and say, okay, I want to create or take this playlist and play it in my patio and set it up there, and then go out to my patio and then control it from my patio and then decide I want to add my living room and my kitchen into that list as well. You can do that. Or if I had another session going in my bedroom and I like the session that's going in the patio, I can just obviously join that as well. There's a fair amount of logic in it in terms of preferences that we, from a user standpoint, have built into it. And that user standpoint, again, comes from the founders who have been living with the system for years. So they, they've really built it to what they feel works best for them. And we have many music lovers here in the company. So music was a key passion around the product.
And I noticed there was a kind of status thing on the screens as well. So you could see what was going on in the zones as well.
Yes, you see what's playing. You'll see the artist and song name in the activity list. If it's a television session and there's proper metadata, you'll see that you'll see an icon to know it's a television session. You'll see the name of the session. If it's a photo session, you'll see a camera icon and the name of the photos that are being played. And the same is also true in the video sessions as well. All that is there on the activity list.
Right. And in terms of, talk about the hardware now that you mentioned, kind of, the hardware's got to be reliable and everything. So what hardware do you need to run to be able to get this application on?
Well, the hardware currently that we sell is a server we buy from Velocity Micro. It's been more or less configured to our specification. It's not anything unique. There's nothing proprietary in it. The video clients, we use a box from AOpen. These are all Core 2 Duo machines. Pretty much any of the current generation Core 2 Duo machines will support what we're doing. Where the load is, interestingly enough, is on the multi-zone audio. That actually is what eats up a lot of the CPU cycles. So our 19 audio zones is a direct result of what the CPU processing is capable of handling in the Velocity server. And when we claim that with the ability to run 7 video zones as well as the 19 audio zones. So that's what we've tested with. Less powerful machines would limit us in terms of what we can do, but fundamentally what's available today, is usually good enough. The other things that we require in the product, we've also built into the product the ability to control some of the ADR and television power capability. So powering on a TV, powering on an AVR, We have RS-232 ports that are there capable of handling that. So that's something that's a little bit different. And another port, we can kind of come back and talk about user interfaces and the like, we require is a 232 port if someone wants to use our UPB easy control control devices, which we can talk more about later if you'd like.
So you mentioned there about user interfaces. So is the user interface sort of a part of Media Center, or is it kind of, I'm trying to get to so listeners can understand, is the user interface like a module that runs and then goes into Media Center when it needs to it, or do you or is it a complete shell replacement for Media Center?
Well, it's kind of a complete shell replacement for Media Center, except when we're in the Media Center module, such as the television. Media Center, the Vista version of Media Center is a fairly graphics-intensive product that really does not lend itself well to certain environments like web browsers, as an example. We also develop in Windows presentation layer. We develop in some of the other Microsoft environments. So we kind of like cross a lot of territory in terms of development environment that takes advantage of what Microsoft did within Media Center, but then also gives us the capability to do some of the things that we need to do with our product as well. So one of the things that we've had to do, for example, is in Media Center is suppress a lot of the messages. I'm sure we've all seen the internet security warnings and things of that nature and errors that Media Center generally likes to pop up. So one of the things that we do is we suppress a lot of that. We suppress a lot of the issues that would come up in a Media Center environment through our homepage.
I mean, it's kind of a slightly different approach to other Media Center applications that we're seeing, where you're kind of taking this hybrid approach. But it adds a lot of features that you wouldn't normally get directly from Media Center.
Well, it adds a lot of stability that you normally wouldn't get from Media Center. I would say to you that in terms of raw features, if I counted them up and it was an issue of summing them, meaning how many are there, there's certainly many more within Media Center. But when you get down to the core, again, it goes back to, do you want a hobbyist type computer that does media that I can play with, or do you want a media appliance? That's where the difference is. We really look at the market, and we were very, very careful in this as we looked at the market, that you have devices that are general purpose computers running media applications that I can surf the web and check my email and possibly play a game on, to purpose-built devices that only do the thing that they were designed to do. We are, well, theoretically, we're kind of in the middle, really more like a purpose-built device than we are like anything else.
And so as part of your system, if you were going down this route, would it mean that you would go with the server and the AOpen clients throughout the whole system, or can you still match in traditional Media Center clients?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. Initially, when we built the product, we had obviously the only extender at the time was the Xbox. And we were not happy with the Xbox for a number of reasons that many people who have used them found as well, and they're very limiting. We actually will be announcing in the not too distant future, the ability to use V2 clients with their system. So basically what we'll create is a hybrid environment whereby customers can use PC clients, which have advantages over version 2 extenders and or extenders. The extenders will have the same limitations that extenders have today. But at the same time, there's a lot less money involved with them. We all need to keep in mind that extenders put a lot of load on the server, so it makes the server choices ever more important. But where we're heading with the product is to really begin to embrace standards. and version 2 extenders being one of those. Other standards, as an example, are UPnP devices that we're looking at as well. So you'll see a lot of change come in the product in the not too distant future as we begin to embrace. Now that we've solidified the product, we've solidified our position in the market, and as evidence to the announcement that we'll be making this Wednesday about our OEM strategies, all these above really create for us an environment whereby we believe we can create a very flexible product built around many of the standards that exist in the marketplace today, but yet still allow us to not compromise our appliance-like position and appliance-like operation.
I think the appliance idea is very important, especially when let's talk about the market that you're kind of putting these in. I know you've got some changes. We'll talk about that as well. So when we spoke at CES, the deal then was that you sort of went through a dealer network. So just explain how that worked.
Sure. So when we came to market, first let me back up a moment and say that Fuse is a software company. We've never made any bones about the fact that we buy Velocity hardware and AOpen hardware as an example. So we've always known that our calling card here was software. Now, to get the software to work, we had to ensure that the hardware that we put it on was capable of delivering the performance that we needed. And we also needed to know that what the hardware we had out in the field and customer sites was all consistent, so that we didn't have the situation of, well, if you've got a problem, well, gee, is it your hardware or is it the software or what it is? So we opted to go to market with our software, in essence, being sold and delivered on hardware. And that was the model that we came to the community with. We've recruited a network of dealers nationwide here in the US, and they currently sell our current solution, which we will continue to do and continue to sell. At the same time, now that we've proven the fact that people like what we've done, the fact that there's a market for what we've done, and the fact that it does work, and we've got a reference base of users around this product, we are now moving into the next phase of our business plan. Our plan all along was to more or less morph our business into a software business. So we will continue to sell our product for as long as the people want to buy it from Fuse on hardware. And we're also beginning to entertain discussions with OEMs, companies that build hardware, Microsoft OEMs as an example, and many of the names that are there, that we're beginning to have a dialogue where they can offer an alternative to a straight up media center. This would allow these companies to be able to offer an appliance-like solution for their customers that want a straight media device as opposed to a general purpose computer running a media application.
So that this means then that it'll be an alternative way to getting Fuse. So if you're interested in Fuse, rather than having to go through the traditional dealer way, you could almost also be offered it as part of an OEM installation.
Well, yeah, what I mean by an OEM installation is, I don't want to name names just yet, but XYZ company, who makes a media center today that you would know, now offers a product. It might not be branded as Fuse. They may brand it themselves, which is fine by us, but have our capability, and they will pick a feature set, and they will pick a configuration that they would sell that would have our software installed and operating on systems that they would sell themselves.
Yep. Right, I see. So they could offer the whole home audio element of that as part of their system.
Exactly. So this all goes to our embracing standards. So as a simple audio installation, we'll provide up to however many audio zones they choose to handle, from fairly off the shelf parts to be able to distribute that audio. And as I mentioned to you, we're also working to enable UPnP audio devices as well.
Mm. I mean, I guess that offers, as well as the opportunity, but there must be a real challenge going from the controlled dealer environment to going to OEM and a much more open market, it must there must be a lot of challenges with that.
Well, they're different. The elements and tools that we needed to develop for the dealer community are certainly the same that we need to have for the OEM community. The difference being that we, where it changes for us is that we take ourselves out of the level, we eliminate the level of control that we currently have today, where we install our software, we test it, we configure it, we ship it. We now have to offload this to the OEM. So actually a lot of the work going on here at Fuse are building those installation and setup type environments so that an OEM can easily install our software, have a system be configured that they can ship and deliver.
I mean, I think it'd be interesting for OEMs to be able to offer that as a like you said, like an alternative, but almost for adding features as well to add that. And certainly the things like the audio and the video distribution is a different way of using Media Center, but it's kind of still keeping with the core idea of Media Center.
Yes, and we often talk about in the industry, in the CD industry per se, Media Center acceptance, or candidly lack thereof. And the real question is, why hasn't Media Center taken off more than it has? It certainly has within the hobbyist community environments. I admit I'm a bona fide geek. I love my Media Center. I love playing with it. I love playing with the latest plugins and trying different things. And I don't mind reinstalling the operating system two or three times a year. You know, I'm up for that. I'll do it. But that's not the mainstream market. And where we see the mainstream market is really, kind of the every man and every woman who are not technically acute. Look at how many people couldn't set the clocks on their VCRs for ever,
yeah.
Right? They're not technically oriented. So it's our belief that the power of Media Center is the media, is you have one device that provides you all of your digital media, and in our case, provides it to you anywhere you want in your home. And the user experience is the same room by room and does not require any type of technical know-how per se to use it. So we believe that by having OEMs offer this as an alternative, and again, we don't ever envision us, quote, replacing Media Center. We see it as an alternative, because I need to go back here. As a hobbyist probably will not like our product, because a hobbyist can't add the latest cool module that might come out, and they can't, play with it the way that they would with the Media Center. That's not the target for our product. Our target for the product is really the everyday man and woman, as I mentioned. So we believe that from an OEM perspective, if we provide them that option, they can reach a customer set they currently have nothing to sell to today. And again, I think it's been proven time and again that when you put a Media Center in front of those types of people, it's overwhelming, it's complicated, and it tends not to end well.
Yeah, so it's a slightly different market then, I guess that's what you're saying, that you're aiming at, than the traditional enthusiast.
I think it's a very different market, not a slightly different market. It's a very different market.
And having a lockdown system, I think, is certainly the way to improve stability. I mean, even if with normal Media Center, I find that if you keep your box clean and you really use it as a dedicated media server, then you get a much better reliable than you do if you start installing games and adding bits and pieces and tinkering with it as enthusiasts like to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, I know myself that there's a direct correlation to how much work I have to do in my Media Center. If I don't touch it, I turn off all the updates and I just let it hum along and let it record its TV and, watch my movies and whatnot. Works just great, don't have many problems with it. But as soon as I start changing it, all of a sudden things happen, and they're generally not good things that happen.
And some of the other are you then perhaps looking to expand the reach so that you can have additional clients to the core system, you know, ways of connecting it from different appliances that are not part of the core fuse system?
Well, as I mentioned, I mean, directionally where we're heading is embracing standards. So we will embrace V2 extenders. We currently obviously support PC extenders that we have. UPnP devices, I don't want to pre-announce anything, but ever hear of a company called Sonos? That's a UPnP device. So we theoretically could potentially work with that type of hardware. You have slim media devices. There are a number of different ways that we can go. So our goal here is to take advantage of technology that's already there in the marketplace that works real well, and then tie it together with a cohesive software environment. So our goal all along is always has been to leverage the high volume technology standards that are in place and pull it together via a software environment. So you kind of get the gist of where we're heading from that statement.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can see the potential that you can reach, and especially I suppose that you're in control of this environment as well. So there's a lot you can do to it without having to rely on a lot of other things to catch up with you. You've got the sort of control of your own destiny of the platform.
Yes, and my personal goal here, I mean, we will have reached the pinnacle of our product when I can ship to somebody, either by us or by an OEM, in one box, a product that any user can take out of the box, plug in, and through combination of wireless or power line technologies, set up their different clients, move it around their house, and be able to self-install a system and have a whole home media environment without much on the order of technical know-how, other than maybe setting up, an 802.11 dual band N or G environment, that type of thing. So that's where I'm trying to drive the company, is to get us a product that really will truly meet the masses. Currently today, be it running wires or setting up a network, things of that nature. But ultimately, where we want to get to is a product that reaches everybody.
And where's the best place to go to get more information on Fuse?
Well, I'd say currently our website, and at this point, I'd say a conversation like we're having here. I'd encourage anybody to give us a call or send us an email. I'd be happy to answer any questions. We've got a couple of full-time salespeople here at Fuse, and Ted and myself. So we can answer any questions people have.
So I was going to say there's a nice little sort of interactive demo on your website as well.
Yeah, our website is FuseAV, www.fuse, F-U-Z-E, A-V, or even F-U-S-E for that matter, AV.com. We've covered all the bases. and one can truly experience the product and see what we've done on that website. Admittedly, we don't provide a lot of technical detail. We didn't feel it was appropriate, but we can certainly answer any questions people have.
And I think I'll include a link for the website in the show notes, and also the video that I took at CES, because I think that shows quite nicely the user interface, especially the audio side of it, which even in a noisy environment like the Consumer Electronics Show, I think you could get the idea of how the multi-room audio works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks for chatting with us tonight. It's been, like I mentioned at the beginning, a lot of questions from that video and from that initial chat at CES have come about. So hopefully this has answered some listeners' questions, and say if not, they can follow them up on your website.
Yeah, that'd be great. And then again, please, anybody interested, send us emails. We'd like to hear what you'd like to see. From what we're doing, I think we're on the right track, and we're excited about where we're heading.
I think it's an interesting alternative to a traditional media center, and like you said, the market that you're aiming at, it's a definite and attractive option. So many thanks for your time for explaining to us today, and like I said, I'll include links for everything in the show notes, and listeners can take a look at the site.
Excellent, excellent. Ian, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay, that's it for this week's show. Please keep the email coming, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'll see you around on the blog. There's a lot of information on there, you better please subscribe to that. I'll see you on Twitter, isdixon, Facebook, and the forums. Loads of stuff on there as well. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye.